Now, a panel discussion presupposes that you have a theme to discuss as a panel with the other people present. And, of course, you can think of very interesting and complicated themes after all these discussions we have had here these 2 days. But maybe there is one overriding question which is quite simply put, and that is, where do we go on from here? And what are we going to prioritize? And we can try and make that a little bit more concrete by thinking, for instance, of what should be on the agenda at the Frankfurt conference next spring. And what should we, as partners, discuss in the next partner meeting, which will take place tomorrow? So this is really a good moment to give thought to this kind of prioritization ideas and to try and give some follow-up to all the discussions we had today and translate that into some future discussions and actions, let's hope. So I would propose to have that as a theme, and we will become more specific as the discussion goes on, I think. And do you agree on that?
Yeah.
Shall we wait for our companions to ask the first question or to bring forward the first point and then start our discussion on that basis? Who feels challenged?
I've got a first point.
Andrew has a first point.
I mean, here's a point I'd like to make. This project ends next February, I think. We've been talking in the knowledge centres about what is the resource to sustain collaboration. And some people from some cities and some nation states have given examples of how if you can design an interaction between different people so in such a way that it's in their interest to keep collaborating, then you can do it even without a big injection of external money. Is there a way that the assets we're gathering through this project, in other words, people developing trust and confidence in each other, could be sustained after the end of this project? And if so, are there some particular topic areas that lend themselves to that?
Well, who is going to let shine his light or her light on this question? It is connected, of course, to what Franz told us about the social aspects of, for instance, knowledge chambers. It's about human relations. It's about talking to each other. Well, for instance, let's have a look at a knowledge chamber in the Netherlands to see whether things work out that way you would like to. In the Ministry of Education and Science, we also have a knowledge chamber. And one of the remarkable things, indeed, is its the social function it has. The chamber leads to regular contacts between knowledge organizations and policymakers, and what you see is that real ideas are generated in its meetings and in its discussions, which lead to new input for, say, the knowledge agenda of the ministry. Are there similar mechanisms in other countries, in other ministries, and do you think this would be a viable option to pick up the prioritization which we would have in the follow-up of this project? In what other words, would a knowledge chamber or would a similar social network help us to improve the sustainability of IP ambitions?
May I?
Yes, please.
In a knowledge center, it's important to have the engagement of all the partners that come to interact. As an outsider to this project, and although I did not have the information into the profile of the participants, the impression I got from the presentations, from the discussions, is that we, and I include myself in the group, mostly come from the academic, from the research sector. And if you are to proceed in the project in making a more sustainable structure, aiming at culturing and structuring this interaction between research underpinning and policy, I think it's imperative that the voices of more policy agencies, and I'm not talking about ministries only, because different countries have different structures and decision-making on education is being made differently, okay, from diverse groups of people. So my suggestion to the project is that you develop a campaign to engage more educational actors, decision makers in education. Researchers and academics are not decision makers. So I think before the structuring of a knowledge a center, whatever, you need to draw input from the other side of the equation as well, and perhaps a third leg can be practitioners. Now, there are a lot of teachers out there in Europe. We cannot be talking really of engaging teachers and getting their interests integrated into what comes out of research and what research has to offer. But perhaps as intermediaries, we can consider school leadership, which is taking a new form in Europe today, which comes to represent the regional level, the local level, and so forth. So I would say that besides the academic underpinning, it is the policy track and the practitioner's track via school leadership that needs to be activated as well.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I would back that point up in the sense that I think there's a lot of infrastructure, and we keep talking about infrastructure, and Mark was talking about it, and Frank was talking about it. But there's a lot of infrastructure, and you can always make things better and better, but at some point you've got to look at why policymakers are or aren't using research in terms of the competencies that they have, in terms of the attitudes that they have, in terms of the sort of distribution of you know, almost power between them and what they're trying to do, and then actually say, well, how can we better address those? You know, do we need better training programs? Because it's not just researcher deficit, it's policymaker deficit, and it's a partnership approach, and we need to sort of start thinking about the other side of things, I think.
Down there.
Yeah, I think when you can look across different disciplines and different cultures of research use, and you can see that in some cultures of research use, the policymakers value the research and they go out and get the research, and if the research isn't there, then the research is commissioned. And I think part of what we're talking about here is the degree to which the policymakers actually value what research evidence can bring to the table.
Okay, Tracy.
I agree actually with the last three statements. I think if we're thinking about creating a culture where this is really not a question of, it's not optional anymore to think about how you might want to actually include, or whether, or you don't even ask that question, do I want to include research? It's just, it is one of the first stops you make as a decision maker. I think that we need to be realistic about the scope of that challenge and understand that it will take time also to do that. I think in the amount of time that this project has been running, the dialogue has already moved forward from questioning the basic premises of would it be useful to do this to now thinking about how do we actually instill this in the system. So We have a long way to go, but I think we can at least take, you know, not that we've done it alone, but we can acknowledge that some way has gone forward. But what I see in terms of challenges or questions that we also need to ask ourselves are some of the really thorny questions around the involvement of other players, like the voice of parents or the voice of media, and how we can communicate this kind of dialogue also to those stakeholders. Because at some point, you need to really be able to think about running a system that is able to discuss these issues using the same kind of language. And you can't have, you know, part of the system be completely disassociated from the other part. And so I think one of the things we need to ask is how can we better reach out to media, for example, to build capacity in terms of what we're talking about so they understand. And the other one is that we need to think also about the kind of answer we give to situations, that very useful exercise we had with the systematic review, which sort of showed anything is better than nothing, but wasn't very specific about what it was demonstrating was effective. I mean, I think we have to acknowledge both the sort of the limitations of research evidence and indicators, and also have answers to questions that are frustrating for everyone. Like, what if they spend a huge amount of money, they being the government, what if somebody funds a huge research project and it turns out either that there's no impact, or worse, that it's actually achieving what exactly opposite of what it was meant to do. I mean, one of the dangers of doing this is you might find out that something doesn't work, and you've been funding it for a long time, and you've been pouring money into it, and so there's a political element of taking risks and actually trying to understand if, you know, being brave enough to say, we're really openly asking the question of whether something works or not. And if you openly ask that question, the answer might be that it doesn't work. So using research and having that dialogue is also inherently a risk for decision makers if they really want to put themselves on the line. So I think we as sort of researchers need to understand that we can push for sort of transparency, truth, openness, all the things that we think go with it, but it really does come with certain risks and certain elements associated with that we can't overlook either.
Yes, you would like to respond, Andrew. Okay.
Yeah, 3 points. On exactly the same question about engaging the policymakers or any other users. Firstly, not everybody can get to conferences. Conferences aren't necessarily the format in which you attract the attention of all the stakeholders. You get a bias towards people who can make themselves available for a conference, particularly an international one. So I think there's some futility about expecting to get an equal representation in an event like this of all the stakeholders. But one way around that is to have more participative activities in which people are actually getting something immediate out of it that serves their interest. We have an example in the UK where we have a coalition now for evidence-based education, which is bottom-up, and we've got a participative project called the Media Centre, the Education Media Centre, to change the way journalists report educational research. And it has attracted immense interest amongst journalists. Whatever view you have of the profession of journalism, there's a very large interest amongst journalists to improve the quality of research reporting. So that was an unexpected thing. And the reason they're coming and engaging in this project is because they really want to. It's not a conference. It's formulating an exact plan and finding the funding. And it's about two-thirds of the way towards being funded by charities now because it was a good project. The second point is I also, it's interesting, we had the same reaction. I thought the exercise we did on the systematic review about early school leaving was exemplary. And it put us in the position of having to empathize with the actors, the task of tomorrow advising a minister. And for me, that revealed many levels and many layers within what I had previously seen as a more simplistic confrontation between policy and research. Like, are you talking about trying to illuminate the world of a politician or through research, or are you trying to illuminate the world of a senior policy advisor or a junior policy developer? So there's quite a lot of intricate detail which is very important to the people involved in policy making, which is brought out by a practical exercise like that. So I really commend that. Finally, the point it was inspired by our last speaker appealing to us to tell him things. It makes me feel a great problem we have in education is about accumulation, not just a repository, but the accumulation of evidence. I originally came from the natural sciences in physics. And in a sense, when there's an advance in one area of natural science, the role of communicating your advance is to inspire other people to do a linked piece of work so that, as it were, the area of knowledge grows in a coordinated and coherent way. And in education, I found that we tend to work in a much more patchwork way, where we have a one-off evaluation, and then another different one-off evaluation, and then somebody develops a theoretical idea somewhere, and somebody else does an empirical study somewhere else. But the difficulty for a user, like a policy user, is that it's very difficult to get a coherent sense of the whole evidence story on an important issue. You just get bits. And the reason I once had to address a conference on accumulation, and after I'd given my talk, I realized that the whole conference organization had thought that accumulation meant putting a document in a warehouse, and that was the end of it. Whereas with a scientific background, you have the idea that accumulation is about seeing how the next piece of research is connected to the previous piece of research. So it's actually about research design. It's about planning the future research in the light of the previous research. And that's something missing, I think.
Catherine would like to respond.
I think it's true, and I follow Tracy and a lot of people here who've been speaking, because we mustn't fall into the trap of reductionism. I mean, a policy is not the same as a randomized controlled trial. I mean, you're looking at one specific aspect in time, and a policy should be comprehensive, should be integrative. And a policy on early school leaving can't be affected with just one measure. It's always a combination of measures. And that's what makes it very difficult for difficult. I mean, that's the complexity a policymaker has to deal with. That is, that there are even conflicting evidences. Yeah. And that you still have to make a choice at one time. One instance that we have now at the department, because we funded a review on effectiveness in education, and one of the things that the researchers saw that there's a lot of questions on grouping in classrooms, for instance. And they saw that for well-abled and good performance students, it was better to put them with other good performers. But for low ES children with a high risk of falling behind, it's much better to be in a heterogeneous environment. But you have, as a policymaker, you can't do both. You can't put the good ones separate and have the good and the bad ones together. I mean, that's a decision you have to make. Evidence is there to inform you, but you have to make a societal decision on taking on account these and also other factors. And there's no linear direction from a piece of evidence to a new policy. It doesn't. It's just not how it works.
Thank you, Catherine. I've got two questions in the right corner. I do not know all your names, unfortunately.
Thanks. One
and two here. Yes, I know.
Sorry, one thought that I had was maybe we're targeting the wrong people. We're targeting the policymakers of today. In fact, maybe we should be targeting the policymakers of tomorrow. So rather than actually be going out to people currently in government and saying this is what works, maybe we should, you know, for example, in the UK, be going to the Labour Party and actually saying, for your next manifesto in 2 years' time, these are the sort of ideas that actually seem to be working well. Or in the run-up to elections, just saying while you're developing your manifestos, these seem to be the things that are currently working, and therefore they'll carry those and the force of those ideas with them once they get into power.
I would just like to follow on what was already said, and that is the importance of hearing the other's voice. Because I was kind of wondering at this conference, it is... you know, evidence, policy, and practice. I don't know how many actual teachers are here, or the head teachers, school principals in this room, or have been during this conference. So this is one point. And, of course, I understand the difficulty of having people coming to the conference, especially policymakers and especially practitioners. But perhaps there is a way out of it, because parents have their association. There is European Parent Association that brings together the parents' association, not only from EU proper, but from the other countries, which can be really, you know, very good partner or interlocutor in this conversation. There is also Head Teachers Association. There are in different countries, maybe international one. Then, you know, we can also may look into the Education International that brings together the teachers' unions that are not always only interested in salaries, but also in the policy and the practice in the teachers. So there is also Leadership for Learning International Group, which brings together the new leaders and the head teachers. So rather than trying to locate individual partners in individual countries, you know, like the head teachers or the parents, maybe we or you can look at making closer liaisons with those networks and take the work further. That's that's for one thing. And what I would suggest as the next step is for a kind of, I liked very much the systematic review, and it brings me that to the point that it is, I would say, more useful to have a thematic conference on a specific policy theme, which is at heart of majority of the countries, like it is dropouts or whatever, or which could be something for the future policymakers, something to think about. And finally, the third idea is if it is possible to reorganize the portal in a way geographically and thematically, because what policymakers love to see is the position of their country in the other countries. I'm not talking about PISA now, but about the different things which have been done in different countries, to see how it is done, let's say, in Ireland, how it is done in the Netherlands, some not major thing, but let's say improvement of numeracy, math teaching, or whatever. So this is another suggestion for the portal. Thank you.
Thank you. I think the suggestion to approach associations is a very useful suggestion. We've got two questions here, and please.
Yeah, I wonder if we are focused too much in effectiveness, because maybe learning from failure is also an option, because it's too hard to make in some policy decision that the nations, the region, the district trying to copy what others may is thinking that maybe there's a good reason for doing that, but there is no reason for doing. So maybe the center can have a more active role in also saying what doesn't work, because we can see that the same failures are doing different areas from education, ICT or another, and these common failures at least we can able to say that what we can do, well, we able to say that they can do, they don't have to do.
So a stronger form of learning from each other and learning from each other's failures. Yes, yes. You please.
Thank you. I'd like to reflect your question that would a knowledge chamber to help us to improve the sustainability of evidence-based education ambitions. And I would reconstruct this sentence that how would it, because I think that it would be able to do this, but how? And there was a common structure of thinking in all the excellent lectures that I would modify a little bit. It was a little bit about a linear or a circle imagination of the evidence usage process. But even if we think it as a linear model, then producing evidence, transferring evidence, and using evidence, or even if we think of it as a circle that using or producing again, reflecting on, I don't really agree it. In my mind right now, there is a kind of different model which says that this is not mainly about knowledge transfer. It, of course, knowledge transfer is a very important element, but how evidence can be used is a knowledge reconstruction, because what is the product of a research project, and it can be an evidence for the researchers, it is only a data or an information, for example, for the schools or for the policymakers. They have to think of it. They have to read that 21 page. They have to work on it. They have to spend time on it. Then they have to reconstruct the knowledge for themselves, taking into account all the available good quality evidence, whatever. And this is a reconstruction process. Now, consequently, I think that these evidence brokerage activities or institutions, it is a very important part of their activity to transfer the knowledge. But on the other hand, as far as I understand, for example, those who referred to this systematic review training here and the example to try it to take into practice, it was not only important because we got some insights how to do it, but because reconstructing knowledge needs general and field-specific skills as well. So I would suggest to the brokerage institutions to map out what kind of skills are required to reconstruct knowledge on the level of schools and on the level of policymaking, and after that start activities which target these required skills to develop. I don't know what I can imagine some things, but my main idea is to map these skills and then find something out how to target the audience with really relevant skills to teach them. And of course, this is only also a learning process for the evidence chambers as well, mm-hmm. and for the researchers as well. And the other thing which is in my mind that I think that knowledge brokerage should, at least for me, one of the most important outcome of this whole evidence-based usage development process, which is a long-term process, of course. So one of the most important outcome could be for the schools and for the policymakers as well to calibrate, to tailor, to target their decisions and their activities much properly. I mean, for example, on the school level, it can mean to target not only groups of students, to tailor the teaching practice for the group and the specific needs of the group, but only to tailor their teaching activity to target the individual students much better, for example, by creating much proper individual learning plans using individual test outcomes, for example, long-term test outcomes, longitudinal test outcomes. Now, what I'm trying to say by this, that I think that it should be clear, or maybe this is clear except for me, but it should be more clear for me at least, what are the very clear aims of the knowledge brokerage, long-term aims of the knowledge brokerage activity. And so this, it became a triangle. The aim, the clear long-term aims of the knowledge brokerage activity, and then the skills needed to reach these aims, and how to prepare the actors from different levels to learn these skills.
Thank you very much. In fact, I hear you saying that knowledge reconstruction is a costly process, which takes up a lot of time, and that knowledge brokers, by concentrating more on the skills required, could help making this process more adequate. Well, thank you very much.
What I noticed from the discussions was that there was no focus into the type of research we're talking. There are international surveys. There are individual academic researchers going on. There is research commissioned by the governments. The scope of these different types of researches is different. And when we talk about research evidence, the research informed policy, and what is it we wish to, how we wish to influence policy, I think we need to differentiate between the type of research results we wish to integrate into the policy articulation. So we need to be talking of different levels, perhaps. It might take the form of a macro, meso, micro level orientation of classifying the research that exists out there. And that should also be assessed, looked into, in terms of the funding agency. It is quite different when we conduct research to solve a solution, when there is a scope given by a policy agency, than when we do academic research to find out whether X or Y works. So I think that we should be more reflective, if you wish, into formulating typologies to talk about levels and types of the type of issues we are addressing here. And I shouldn't be taking all the time, but what I have not seen around, and I would love to see, is how is research in the different countries on educational or cognitive sciences being supported. I have not seen a mapping of this type anywhere. I know that in other sectors, like in the food industry, you know, the commission is investing a lot of money to map out the type of funding available on food and nutrition. But I have not seen it for education. And that can be a preliminary exercise which might help this project on its next phase.
Well, thank you very much, Katie. I think there's one more question?
You want to have one
response? Okay.
Well, I was thinking actually that why is this transfer problem actually there? Is it inherent on the methods of the research? Do we have to think about different ways of research in the educational domain? Because the way we're doing this research, it implicates that you also create this transfer problem. So maybe you have to think about different kind of research in which practice is already more involved, more action research, or... Well, I don't know if that is in the sophistic way, which is the previous key speaker was talking about. But the traditional research is also a problem in making this transfer a problem. So maybe we have to think about research which is more using methods which doesn't implicate this transfer problem, actually.
Thank you. Andrew?
I wanted to pick up on a previous question. Is that okay?
Yes.
I'm not sure if the lady at the back who asked it might have left. I can't see her.
Yes, she has.
Here's the answer to the question to the lady who's just left. No, she said, can't we... this is trying to get down to a practical thing that we can do during the year. Can't the portal be more thematic, I think she said, something like that. And as far as I understand, not all of us have necessarily seen a demonstration of how the portal operates. Is that right? Just some people in the group. I've had the privilege and pleasure of doing this and putting up the first sort of country portal onto the European portal. That's the UK one. And I can certainly say it's not a very difficult exercise to do it. So I encourage people to do it. And I, you know, would offer any help and support to anybody who tries to do it. But the main point is to try and underline how this portal is different to other ones. Basically, it's bottom-up and flexible. So, and I stand corrected if the technical people want to correct me, but as I understand it, any group of people can create a sub-portal with any kind of boundary around it. It doesn't have to be national. It could be national, it could be language-based, or it could be city-based, or regional, or it could be about maths, or it could be about special needs. The only common feature about a sub-portal on our European portal is that somebody is responsible for it, and somebody has the rights, the administrative rights, to upload a number of sources of research evidence. But the theme of that research evidence is determined by you. So, again, I stand corrected if somebody wants to go against what I've just said, but I hope this is an encouragement to people to think about creating a portal, however local you want it to be, or thematic.
Well, thank you, Andrew. I do not... possibly someone is going to correct you down there. Is a question?
About to correct Andrew, no.
I'm sorry?
I wouldn't correct Andrew, no. I just wanted to try and be a bit more positive again, because it seemed to me as if we were sort of all being a bit doom and gloom in some of the comments. I wonder if there's still a need. We're still... What is it that we are trying to do is still, you know, an area for discussion. So how do we actually know whether evidence-informed policy and practice in education is better now than it was 5 years ago or not? Yeah. I think some... you know, it's difficult. It's a complex area, as Micheline, the first speaker, said. Yes, this is a very, very complex area of policy. So the factors that influence decision-making in those areas are going to be very, very complex. And I don't think we're arguing that research is the only factor that is going to be taken into consideration. And because of that complexity, it's very difficult for us to know to what extent research has been taken into account in any specific policy decision. But some of the way in which we talk about this issue seems to suggest we're thinking about the role of research in a quite an instrumental way, i.e. there's a bit of research that says you should do X, so you should do X. Why aren't you? But as I think the discussion around the exercise yesterday illustrated, it's rarely as simple as that in this complex area of education. And, yes, you know, maybe what we should be thinking about it, something more like Tracy was kind of saying, is it's more of the Enlightenment model of research knowledge transfer. It's making people aware of ways of thinking about issues and problems and how well are we doing at that, rather than specifically focusing or berating ourselves for not achieving very specific, instrumental, obvious, evidence-informed educational policy and practice decision-making in any specific circumstance.
Yes. Thank you very much. It appears to me that now we are approaching slowly the answer to the question which Franz put before us. With a look at the clock, I think we have to be a bit more strict now, indeed very strict. I've got one appeal from Tracy, who wants to tell us something, and Katrin, and I propose that we then conclude this session, because as I understand it, David wants to talk to us, and of course, Richard. So, Tracy.
I'll be brief. Just to pick up on that, and also to pick up on Frank's comment, I think I mean, I think we can, sort of congratulate the field in a sense for moving forward in very concrete ways. But I think we do need to be on guard to keep sort of the goal in sight, the target in sight. So one of the things about saying, well, maybe we should try and avoid this transfer problem by just involving practitioners from the beginning, which I'm completely for. I think action research is really useful and really helpful, and I think it's one of the best ways to build capacity for research use and understanding in teachers is to do that precisely. But I think that you need to guard against a sort of model which suggests, well, that might be better because it's easier. I think we can really insist, I think education and the needs of the learner really require that we can insist that we want to know as best as we can. And that might mean a difficult model. That might mean a randomized control trial. Different questions require different methodologies. But I think we owe it to ourselves and to our students to try and actually make that happen. And I think we need to be careful about trying to make it too easy, in a sense, with the best intentions, of course, but so that you actually, the quality of what you're doing is being compromised. And I think that it's important to keep reminding ourselves of that.
Thank you very much. Now, before we close the panel session, Katrien?
And I totally concur, and I think that's one of the most important things that I've picked up here is the whole idea of being truly multidisciplinary, not only regarding the methodology and that, but also in using more than one evidence bit for each activity that you use. I mean, I think that's really crucial, and that your methodology is not the prime driver, but your research question or your policy question is. So I really take this home with me. Just to show that it's equally important to now start thinking how we are developing the attitudes and the competences and the general reflex of including research evidence in all your domains, whether you're a practitioner or a policymaker. And for instance, with us in the ministry, I think it's important that we instill this reflex with our colleagues of making references when they note something. I mean, so many policy papers say, it is stated that, and then just having these reflexes in very operational things like, where did you get it, do you have a reference, and so forth. These things can help us in really building this very multifaceted use of evidence and being trained to use it. So I think this is, for me, a good conclusion for this.
Well, okay. Thank you. Thank you very much, Katrien. I think this sums up a number of elements which we have been discussing in recent days. Unfortunately, we have to close this discussion now. We discussed a lot of things concerning the sustainability of these activities, this project, and after this project. We discussed some of the challenges. We spoke about the need to mobilize people, to mobilize partners, and also partners who have not yet been involved until now. There was a strong warning against reductionism and against completely equaling research and policy, because the two remain different, even if you want to have them joined. There was a call to reflect on the issues we want to address. There were very practical remarks about the possibility to work with a portal. There was, of course, the importance of multidisciplinarity, and I've got lots more here, which I'm not going to read to all of you. I'll try, together with David, to make something of this. And indeed, there will be input from this for our next meetings. I would thank the members of the panel for this panel discussion, and would thank all the discussants in the room who have joined us in this discussion. And then I think we can go to our next item on the agenda. And it's...